Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. I hope parents and grandparents have been listening to the show this week because we've been helping you come up with great places to take the family this summer. We heard from Erica Housekeeper of the Happy Vermont blog on Monday, yesterday, the Cabot Farm Trail, and today we're going to learn about a couple cool Vermont museums and a fun ballpark to hang out at. At 9:30, we'll hear from the current Vermont Lake Monsters season about that, and next hour we'll visit the Madsonian Museum in Waitsfield, but first we head to Norwich and the Monshire Museum of Science. It's delightful, it's fun, it's a little kooky, and it teaches you about a lot of different concepts of science that you didn't even know you were learning about until your mind is just crammed full of knowledge. Here to tell us about the Monshire is the Acting Executive Director, Jennifer Rickard. Jennifer, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. Listeners, if you've got a question about the Monshire for Jennifer, or you want to share a story about a visit there, you can call us 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You can also email us vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. And I don't know how apt or perfect my description was, so let us know how you describe the Monshire to people who have never been there yet.
The Monshire is a great experience for people of all ages. We strive to provide experiences in which people can explore science, explore the world around them in delightful, surprising, and fun ways.
Oh, absolutely. Now, give us a little history of the museum and its original building and then where you are today.
The Monshire was established 45 years ago. We actually were, we started with a collection of natural history specimens that Dartmouth College had on hand, and they were donating those to the community. So a group of community members came together, decided that these specimens needed to stay as community resources. So they pulled some funds, raised some funds, and bought an old bowling alley in Hanover, and that's where the Monshire began. It was very much a collection of taxidermy birds, eggs, things like that. But in those early days, there was a fairly quick transition to the kinds of interactive exhibits that you would find at the Monshire today.
Yeah, and as much as I would have loved to have seen that early bowling alley science museum, the building you have now is just stunning. Tell us about that structure.
Yeah, so about 15 years after the Monshire was founded, the board of directors purchased 110 acres along the Connecticut River in Norwich and built the current building specifically as a museum. So it was designed to, specifically for the purpose of housing these interactive experiences. It's a two-story structure, 35,000 square feet. We have a lovely tower that overlooks the Connecticut River. Mm-hmm. And we truly are a two-state museum. We're solidly rooted in Vermont, but you can see the Connecticut from the property and from the tower and see the nearby state just right across the river.
What ages enjoy coming to the Monshire?
All ages. We really do design our exhibits and experiences for all ages. However, young children ages 2 to 8 are probably our core audience and their families. So we know that all those children come with typically the same number of adults with them. So we want the experience to be enjoyable and educational for the whole family.
Yeah, I'm one of those adults that runs around the building having too much fun, but I guess that probably doesn't narrow it down a whole lot, does it, Jennifer?
That's what we want to see. Absolutely.
Perfect. Tell us about some of the permanent exhibits that people will find there.
Well, one of the newest permanent exhibits is our Wonderwoods. It is a new early childhood education area that we opened in February of 2020. So it did not get much of its opening rollout.
It is so ready, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. We did a lot of work to research and study the needs of young children, build on our own experience of Andy's Place, which was a long-time favorite and fixture here in the museum. But early childhood education and our understanding of that has evolved a great deal in those decades since that original space was designed. So Wonderwoods is this wonderful new area of the museum for children 6 and younger, and it has climbing features, a reading nook, areas to play, sensory exploration. So that's a really delightful new addition to our permanent collection. We also have an exhibition called Discovering the Natural World, and many people are familiar with our live animal exhibits, so our honeybees, our leafcutter ants, the aquariums where we have fish and turtles, those are all part of our Discovering the Natural World exhibition, and we really do try to think about how do we integrate the indoor and outdoor experiences at the Monshire, and we're thinking about the local flora and fauna of this region and what people are going to be able to see when they go exploring outside on the trails, and how to think more deeply about that when they're inside the museum.
Jennifer, as you mentioned, the Monshire is located right near the Connecticut River, and the river is an important part of what people encounter at the museum. Tell us what they'll experience.
We have several trails that have spectacular views of the river. Our River Loop Trail goes right along the edge, and people can really sort of experience that riparian habitat along the river. The views are just beautiful. And we have a new outdoor space just as people head toward the riverfront, it's a wonderful sort of nature play area, and that was a new addition last summer when we reopened, and we started by just reopening our outdoor spaces and created this wonderful and delightful nature exploration area out along the water.
And how will museum goers be exposed to astronomy?
We have done some really interesting things about astronomy on and off. It's not a major part of our current collection. We do have an exhibition which is a part of our permanent collection. It comes in and out, called Planetary Landscapes. And that's really sort of more exploring the phenomena that you might envision in a study of astronomy. How the sand dunes might shift on a planetary surface. How the interstellar skies appear. So that's more looking at some basic phenomena. But we have had some great celebrations of the Apollo moon landing. We've had some special events around the solar eclipse a few years ago, and there's another one coming up. I believe, 2024. So we'll be looking ahead to that.
Right around the corner. This is the Summer of Dinosaurs at the Monshire. It makes me want to just walk out of the station right now and head to Norwich. What is happening with these dinos?
We are so excited to be having the Summer of Dinosaurs. We have two life-size casts of Allosauruses. The adult is 23 feet long. The juvenile is about 6 feet long. These are enormous structures, and you know, when people walk into the museum, they're just in awe of the size. And
lucky you have that phenomenal atrium there, right? Right as
exactly.
You walk in. Oh my gosh!
Yes, they're towering up into the just about to the second floor.
Wow.
Yes, and then we have another exhibition that accompanies this, the Tiny Titans, Dinosaur Eggs and Babies, so you can learn all about the lives of dinosaurs, big and small. There are interactive components, lots of wonderful fossils to explore.
How long do the dinosaurs stick around for?
They will be here until early September. September 26th, so through the month of September.
Excellent. And I think you have something, a dino drive-in coming up. Am I right about that?
We do. We are having a series of fundraisers for the museum through this spring and summer. So we will be having a viewing of the movie Jurassic Park at the Fairlie Drive-In, and that will be July 28th. So that will be part of our Triassic Trilogy, a series of fundraisers to help us raise money to support our mission of science education.
The museum is open for visitors now. Are there any restrictions? Are reservations required? What should people know?
Reservations are required. We are currently operating with some restrictions in terms of the capacity, the number of people we can have inside the museum at one time. That is still in place from the state of Vermont. So we really do ask everyone to make a reservation. But there is plenty of room there. The numbers have gone up. We are still requiring masks because half of our attendees are children, and those are by definition unvaccinated at this point, so we are requiring masks. But it's still, there's plenty of room to roam about the museum, to explore, and I hope people won't let those precautions get in the way of coming to see the dinosaurs.
Yeah, and I'm glad that the numbers, you know, the capacity numbers are reduced right now. You don't want to spook these dinosaurs while they're hanging out there at the Monshire. You can make reservations at monshire.org. And what are the days and times that you're open right now?
We are open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
All right. Jennifer, what kind of programs does the Monshire offer for kids and their families?
We have daily activities for kids and families. Right now, we're hosting those hands-on activities outside in our Hughes Pavilion or on the terrace in the back of the museum. So we're featuring all sorts of hands-on activities. Right now, looking at fossils is one of our favorites to accompany the dinosaurs.
Yeah, that is so neat. The fossils you have there are great. I know in the past, I don't know how it's played out with COVID, might even be more so, but you've always had great interaction and programs for schools, for teachers, even homeschoolers. So what's been going on in that capacity with the Monshire?
Yes, it has been quite an interesting year for that kind of activity. We've always had many programs on site at the museum and in schools, working with teachers and with students. This year, last spring, we really pivoted and created a whole suite of online resources we call Monshire at Home. Those are all free on our website. So we encourage people, if they have downtime in their summer and they want to do some science at home, there are over 100 videos, I think 70 or so downloadable activities. So we have a wide range of resources available for families. We have also been working with teachers and schools. Most of that work has been remote through the current school year, but we're certainly looking forward to next year being able to be more on-site, working directly, providing professional development to teachers, working with their students in classrooms. Really looking forward to that.
And you have a new community space, the Anderson Center. Tell us about that.
Yes. One thing that COVID provided us with was a quiet period of time to do a renovation that we've been planning for several years. Hmm. This new community space provides an updated community room for gatherings where other nonprofits or community groups can host educational programs as well as the Monshire's educational programs. We've updated our coat room, which when this building was built 30-some years ago, we didn't need nearly as much space as we do now. So we have a larger space for families. We have a special area for school groups for their things that they come with, their lunches and backpacks and all of that sort of thing. And we have new new restrooms, gender-neutral restrooms that will make it much easier for anyone who would prefer that than a gendered bathroom space. So, you know, when families come, there may be people with disabilities. There may be people who have, you know, a parent-child, say it's a father and a daughter, need to use the restroom together. So those family restrooms are a great improvement and amenity for our visitors.
Yeah. So we've mentioned your work with schools, teachers, and then this new community space. What is the Monshire's role in the local community?
The Monshire plays a role, I think, that is larger than what the average visitor can see when they come to the museum. I think, you know, a lot of people see and experience a fun day out with their family, and there's tremendous value in that. But the Monshire also plays an enormous role in the quality of life in this community. There are limited resources for children and families to have, you know, those rewarding out-of-school time experiences together. So I see that, you know, that family-strengthening role as really key to what we do. And then certainly science has been at the forefront of all of our minds in the past year. And the Monshire believes that, you know, science can and should begin early. An appreciation and understanding of the world is rooted in science. And we've all leaned on science this year to move us forward as a society and as a global community. And so I see the Monshire as one piece of that puzzle and playing an essential role in our community.
As I mentioned at the beginning, parents, grandparents, you know, it's the summer and finally they're able to get out, take the kids places. So when they do bring the kids to the Monshire, how much time should parents and grandparents plan to spend there on a typical visit?
At least a couple of hours, I think, is enough. Some people stay all day.
Yeah.
But if you can make the time, an opportunity to explore the galleries indoors and also take some time outside to experience Science Park. The water features are delightful and wonderful for children who, you know, want to cool off on a hot day. And I really do encourage people to get out on the trails, go visit the Playgrove, take a walk on the Planet Walk, and explore those outdoor spaces as well.
Jennifer, are there season passes or annual memberships that people can purchase?
Yes, we have memberships, and that, you know, for many families is a money-saving opportunity if you plan to come visit more than two or three times in a year. A membership can be a really terrific option. We do have low-cost memberships and visits available for people who have low incomes and still want to participate. We want to make sure we really value that level of accessibility and want to make sure that the Montchair is for everyone in our community.
Okay, I know you're in charge there, but what display do you like playing with at the museum?
One of my absolute favorites is one of the simplest in many ways. It's our gravity well. It's spinning the pennies around in this sort of circular pattern, and there's something mesmerizing about that. And it allows for the kinds of experimentation that the Montchair is really all about. What happens if I do this a little differently? If I, you know, change the direction or the angle of the penny as it's rotating down into the well? And, you know, it can be that sort of collaborative experience as well in a family or even with strangers, that having conversations about what we're seeing, asking questions, trying new things, that is really what the Montchair is all about.
We've got about a minute left. I've mentioned how much fun I've had. I've talked about parents, grandparents, bringing the kids, the grandkids there. But are there programs at the Montchair for adults?
Yes, we, one of the things we've been doing, over the past year is hosting, some programs on public health for adults. And, we also host programs, for the Hanover Garden Club, which are often on conservation, botany, and learning about plants is a passion for many of the adults in our community. And at some point, we'll get back to having our adult nights at the Montchair. We have a program called Montchair Unleashed, where we've opened the galleries in the evenings and with music and food and welcomed our 21-plus adult audiences.
Oh, that's exciting. Jennifer Rickards is the Acting Executive Director of the Montchair Museum of Science in Norwich. You can check out the website, montchair.org, and don't forget, this is the summer of dinosaurs. Jennifer, thanks for getting us ready for a fun summer at the Montchair.
Thank you so much. I hope you'll come visit.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to take a break for a CBS News update and then return to play ball at Centennial Field in Burlington. We're going to check out the Vermont Lake Monsters. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Sengary. My heart sank when Major League Baseball said they wanted to contract in 2001 by eliminating the Minnesota Twins and the Montreal Expos. Luckily, both of those franchises survived, although the Expos are now in Washington, D.C. Then a few years ago, baseball was at it again, saying they wanted to lop off 40 minor league baseball clubs. For a long time, minor league baseball fan who read the sporting news religiously in his youth, following the minors at every level, this was another blow to the solar plexus. To me, it ignored all the communities who supported clubs, built stadiums, and resurrected minor league ball after it really bottomed out in the 60s and 70s. And worst of all, our beloved Vermont Lake Monsters were on the excommunication list. Then COVID shut down the minors in 2020. The Lake Monsters' future was as difficult to follow as Champ's journey around Lake Champlain. But the picture has cleared up, and the Monsters are playing again. We have their Senior Vice President, C.J. Knudsen, with us to give us the full story. C.J., it's always great speaking with you.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
Oh, I'm very well now. And you can call listeners with a question about the Lake Monsters. You can let us know about a night at the ballpark, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. I was in a dark place there, CJ, but now everything is okay. First of all, can you give us a little history of baseball in Burlington and of the Lake Monsters?
Yeah, baseball in Burlington has been here literally for forever. You know, Centennial Field, the field itself was built in 1906. The existing grandstands were built in 1922. And so it's one of the oldest ballparks in the country still in operation. And it's absolutely beautiful. It's really a cathedral.
And the minor league ball has been as high as, what, double A, I think, in the years that we've had baseball in Burlington.
Yeah, Double A, part of the Eastern League back in the 80s. So the Vermont Reds, Vermont Mariners. So the Vermont Reds had a great team. Barry Larkin, Chris Sabo, Paul O'Neill played on that team. And then Ken Griffey Jr. played on the Vermont Mariners in 1988. And then Burlington lost baseball. And then Ray Pecor was fortunate enough to be able to bring baseball back in 1994 and became part of the Expos organization for a number of years and drew huge crowds and fans really embraced it, and there's been baseball in Burlington for the past 27 years, really minus obviously 2020 season, which was postponed or canceled because of COVID.
Mm-hmm. And became the Lake Monsters when? Sometime in early 2000.
Yep, it was after the 2005 season because we were actually the last Expos in baseball. So for the 2005 season, then we relaunched the Lake Monsters name and created the new name and logo for the 2006 season and beyond.
That was so great. For this upcoming season, CJ, let's start with what will be the same at Centennial Field.
Well, we're wearing the same uniforms, the same logo, and really the most important thing is Champ is still going to be dancing on the dugout.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
He's always going to be there, and he was rather sad when the season got postponed last year, and not knowing the future of baseball in Burlington, because that was really up in the air. Nobody knew if baseball was going to be eliminated. You know, Major League Baseball decided to eliminate 42 minor league baseball teams across the country, so that's 25% of minor league baseball in general.
Yeah, Champ had to stay in the lake the whole year, couldn't get out and dance and do his thing. But yeah, so let's now focus on what's different, because there are a lot of things. First of all, the Monsters have a new owner, so tell us about him.
Yeah, his name's Chris English, wonderful gentleman. He's actually born in the Montreal area, lives in Boston, and he's actually building a house right now in South Woodstock. So pretty soon he'll be a pseudo-Vermonter.
Yeah.
And he loves baseball. He actually owns a couple other baseball teams. And you know, I think when Ray Pecor was looking for the person to hand the reins off to, that's when...
Ooh, all right. We just lost CJ. We're going to get him back on. But we're talking about the Vermont Lake Monsters. They are back in action this year. Thank goodness in the Futures League. We're going to hear about that. New owner, Chris English, from Montreal and living in Boston now. And, well, it's going to be another great season, but a little bit different. We're learning about the differences now with CJ Knutson. And CJ, you're back.
I'm back, yes. I don't know what happened there. That came out of left field right there.
That sure did. All right. So Chris English has this team going, and thanks to the Pecors for keeping this franchise going for all those years. But this year we're in a new league. So first of all, why are we no longer in that New York Penn League and an affiliate of the Oakland A's?
Yeah, great question, Rick. You know, unfortunately, Major League Baseball eliminated the New York Penn League. The New York Penn League has been in operation since 1939. It was actually one of the oldest or the oldest continuous minor league baseball leagues in the country. So all 14 teams basically, you know, went different paths. Some joined independent baseball teams. Some joined the Futures League. Some teams like the Lowell Spinners, which are the Boston Red Sox affiliate, they literally just closed their doors and walked away. So it was really, really tough for communities like that. That's why it's just a fantastic thing that Lake Monsters Baseball is still here. We've signed a five-year lease with the University of Vermont. They've been great partners to work with, so we plan on being here a long time. And the Futures League is a great league. It's a collegiate, high-level collegiate wooden bat league. These guys are from all across the country. And the cool thing about the Futures League is at least 13 players on your roster need to either be from New England or go to a New England institution.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that was a rule because I checked out the roster and noticed that. Before we get to that, though, I do want to just talk a little bit about the affiliation with the Oakland A's. I'd have to say, CJ, that that marriage was really a fine one. It was really amicable between the A's and the Lake Monsters. And it looks like we've lost CJ again. We'll get him back on. But it was a really wonderful affiliation between the two. And, you know, we had the Expos for years. When they were the Nationals, it looked like things were a little strained, but affiliation, the marriage between the Lake Monsters and the Oakland A's was a great one. CJ, how much difference is there between low A ball and the Futures League?
Yeah, it's a great question, Rick. It's actually, I would say, you know, the Futures League baseball is probably a little bit better than the New York Penn League. These guys are all obviously wonderful baseball players. They're usually all from Division One programs, usually on full ride scholarships. So I think the quality of ball is definitely comparable to the Penn League, but I think might be a little bit better. So far, the feedback from the fans at the ballpark has been wonderful. You know, people really enjoy watching these guys play. On our home opener, we had one of our guys crush a 3-run home run over the left field fence, and he plays at Princeton. So we've got a couple guys from Harvard. We've got a couple guys from Vermont, so it's you know, definitely more of a local brand baseball, but these guys are really high-quality baseball players, and they're really high-quality people off the field as well.
I think on opening night, didn't your pitcher strike out 19 players, even though we lost?
We did, yeah. We had 19 strikeouts. Wow. So, you know, our guys are really playing well, and you know, they play 68 games this year. We have 38 games at home, 30 on the road, really traveling across New England. And the cool thing about this schedule in this league is we wrap up everything by mid-August. So you're not dealing with early September baseball games like the New York Penn League. And the fun thing about this league is if we go into extra innings after the 10th inning, it goes into a home run derby. And whoever wins the home run derby wins the match.
All right, that I like. I really like that. Now, the other thing, the other league that people in Vermont will be familiar with is another college baseball league. That's the NECBL, which the Mountaineers and the Upper Valley Nighthawks play in. So what's the difference between that league and the Futures League?
It's very similar. I think kind of one of the big differences is a lot of the teams in the Futures League you know, play in stadiums, play in larger venues, usually play in a little bit of larger markets. You know, playing in Burlington, Vermont, is pretty amazing, especially if you're a college age individual. So I think, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, this is going to be one of the most popular college, bat franchises in the country. So I think really everyone's going to want to come here and play. And so I think it's just, you know, great baseball, and these guys are going to get drafted. Not all of them, but, a lot of them will get drafted by Major League Baseball. Then they'll become minor league baseball players, and then, a handful of guys will make it up to the majors, very similar to the Vermont Expos and Vermont Lake Monsters of the past.
Now, I've been perusing the roster. I counted 6 native Vermonters, 3 players from Vermont colleges on the new Lake Monsters roster. Certainly a lot more local, and not a knock on the New York Penn League, but certainly a lot more local than we'd ever see on the old Lake Monsters rosters.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that's a great benefit of the Futures League. You know, back in the Expos, Lake Monsters days, there might have been really 2 or 3 guys, that had Vermont ties that either played at UVM when baseball was still played on campus, or guys that are from Vermont. So it just gives a, you know, really more of a local connection, which is awesome. And, you know, Centennial Field's never looked better. You know, we ended up, doing some major renovations, in the short, couple months that we purchased franchise. The franchise was purchased on March 15th. So it's been a whirlwind trying to Wow. get a ballpark that hasn't been open and operational in a year and a half, back up to snuff. And, put brand new bullpens on the left field line. We took the right field, baseline fencing, moved that in. That'll eventually make room for a beautiful outdoor stadium club for the 2022 season. Mm. Some special seating, some loge boxes, some fire pits, a nice deck out there. And the other cool thing addition that we have this year, which has been have gotten rave reviews, is our custom Neapolitan homemade pizzas at the ballpark.
Oh, Doug, you're speaking my language now. Yeah, and one thing that was always so Lake Monsters, when you went to a game, it was always so much fun. So what kind of promotions will we see this season at Lake Monsters games?
Well, we've got great in-between promotions again, everything from ketchup, mustard, and relish races to, you know, the fan favorites of Hot Dog Hysteria. So we have our three 25-cent hot dog nights throughout the course of the season.
Oh,
first one hits on July 8th, and then we have two fireworks shows this year as well. So July 17th and August 7th for our fireworks shows. And sponsors have been great. I mean, obviously, nobody really knew if baseball was going to be played this year. And so I think a lot of, you know, we're just waiting for the word, you know, to come to help out and step up to the plate, no pun intended. And so sponsors have been great to work with, and the fans have been wonderful as well.
Please don't tell me the dates of the hot dog hysteria, because I once went with a group from work, and we had a kind of a match race, and I took the honors, downing 9-8.
Wow.
Was the closest. Yeah, 9 dogs in one night. Thanks very much.
Well, you can start training, Rick, because the first one's on the 8th, and then the last one of the season's on August 11th. So you're good to go. Plenty of time to train.
All right, sounds good. So we've got to learn a whole new set of teams as we join the Futures League. But I have to admit, CJ, if we didn't have a team, I would root for the Norwich Sea Unicorns, because I am absolutely crazy about narwhals. But tell us about some of the other teams.
Yeah, actually, ironically enough, that's the team that I came from.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in Norwich helping to run that franchise, and we went from a rebrand of the Connecticut Tigers, because we were in single A for Detroit, to the Norwich Sea Unicorns. And that's a crazy name. And when you hear the name, people kind of question that. But once they see the logo, then they understand it. But, yeah, I mean, you've got the Norwich Sea Unicorns versus Vermont Lake Monsters, which I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Brockton Rocks. You have the Starfires. You've got the Worcester Bravehearts. So there's 8 teams total in the league, and they all have really cool names and really cool logos as well.
All right, let's look at the Lake Monsters. Who are some of the players to look out for who could be serious pro prospects in the next few years?
Well, I mean, there's, you know, it's filled. You know, we got a big roster filled with lots of players. Owen Kellington is a high school player right now that he's going to be joining us later on the season here. And he is really a big Major League Baseball prospect, so high school pitcher. So he's the guy that I think, you know, he'll play for us hopefully for most of the season. But I'm going to guess at some point he's going to get drafted, and then he'll have to make a difficult decision in terms of if he's going to pursue a college career playing baseball or turn professional. So
wow.
But he's been on a lot of that Major League Baseball's radar, so it would not surprise me if he gets drafted shortly after he joins us here. But, yeah, so all these guys are fighting for, you know, for spots, you know, in terms of getting on people's radar from a scouting standpoint. And, you know, so far so good. You know, even though we did lose last night 8-0, so that was a tough loss last night. Can't win all of them, but we play the Brockton Rocks again tonight, and we're hoping that, you know, we'll get a victory here and then send them on their way back to Brockton, Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, pretty exciting. I didn't get to get out last night, but I could follow it online through the Futures League website, and so it was great. It was close for a long time, and then I think 5 runs in the top of, like, the 7th kind of changed it. But,
yeah,
it was a close ball game until then. We talked about the players. You also have a really strong manager, a guy who has some serious baseball, college baseball experience. Tell us about Pete Wilk.
Yeah, Pete Wilk, he was the manager or the head coach at Georgetown University for over 20 years. You know, he's just a wonderful guy. He's retired now, and, you know, I think he's just looking for something fun to do. And so he's really a mentor for our players. And so he's our manager, our skipper, and he's great. We've got our pitching coach, our assistant coach, Matt Fincher, who was in the Cape Cod League for a number of years. He's from Atlanta, Georgia. He was actually a member of the Atlanta Braves grounds crew for a number of years. Joey Gamache is another assistant. And then we also have a local assistant, Chris Richards. So Chris Richards was a prominent high school baseball player and college player here in Vermont. He actually got drafted by the Montreal Expos a number of years ago. So he's actually one of our assistant coaches as well. So lots of local ties into Vermont, which is awesome. But Pete Wilk is leading the charge for us. And he's just blown away by the fan support. He's blown away by, you know, really just Vermont in general. You know, he lives in D.C., in the off season with his family, and so for him to be able to spend a summer here in Vermont, he's blown away. He thinks this is the best gig out there, which I definitely agree with.
Yeah, no kidding. It has to be great to get out of D.C. and spend a summer up here in Vermont and be surrounded by these great college baseball players who are excited to show their stuff. We know baseball used some rule changes last year because of the pandemic. You mentioned the home run derby in extra innings. Any other rule changes, special rules that we might see in the Futures League we should be aware of when we attend the games?
Yeah, the other one that just got launched the other day is actually a mercy rule. So if 10 runs or more after a certain inning, then the game would end. And that's really, I think, from a safety standpoint, because you know, these are college baseball players. We want to make sure that they have a great experience here all season with us, and you know, we don't want to have somebody get injured, you know, by throwing too many pitches or playing in a game that hasn't been decided yet, but it looks like it probably could be decided. And that's what we're doing, is we're looking for out for the player safety. But everything else is pretty much standard. You know, we follow Major League Baseball rules, but these guys are on some pitch counts because we want to make sure that their arms are safe, for their college season and for the future as well.
Well, for somebody who sat through most of 18-3 losses when they were the Vermont Expos on a weeknight and just couldn't make it to the end of the game, I really applaud that. I think that's great for everybody for so many reasons. No reason to carry on, especially, the idea is to get them some experience, not to watch one team bludgeon the other.
Exactly.
Yeah, and have you found enough host families for all your players?
Well, we're still always looking for host families, because the players will come and go, throughout the course of the season. You know, as of today, we have a bed for every player on the roster, which is fantastic. Our host family coordinator, Frida Tutt, she volunteers to do this. She's really helped out and created a great program, and the families in the area, they absolutely love it too, but we're always looking for host families, and it's a great experience, because
Oh, and there goes CJ one last time, right as we get close to the end of our interview with him. We'll see if we can get him back for the end. But you can probably find out about the host families. The website, they're still on the minor league baseball website. So MILB.com/Vermont is where you'll find the Lake Monsters information, their schedule. And one thing I should tell you is, as CJ kind of mentioned at the very top, still using the same uniforms, same logos. So you can still wear that great Vermont Lake Monster gear that you've had over the last few years, the great hats, the great jerseys, etc., out to the ballpark, and you'll fit right in because the Lake Monsters still have the great look, great name that they adopted in 2006. Boy, I can't believe 15 years of the Lake Monsters. Before that, Vermont Expos, they were the Mariners, the Reds, and back in the day, people might even remember, I think they used to go by like the Burlington Cardinals, and I'm sure there's going to be some listeners who can remember who they were in the earliest days of playing ball in Burlington. I once met a fan who had been coming there for 30 or 40 years, through all of the different iterations of minor league baseball at, Centennial Field. A really good old ballpark. You'll feel, perfectly comfortable there. And, CJ and the crew of the Lake Monsters always make it very entertaining. So a lot of stuff that will keep you happy. No matter what's going on the field, you'll have a great time at the ballpark. I think they have another home game tonight. So again, check out the schedule. CJ Knudsen is the Senior Vice President of the Vermont Lake Monsters. For the full schedule, MILB.com/Vermont. And it was great having CJ on with us, despite some wonky phone connections. We got through it. All right, we're going to take a break for CBS News, and then we're going to meet a revered architect who also runs a wonderful little museum in the Valley. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. And, well, we've got a little situation here right now, not able to get our guest on the line because of something going on here. So we will hopefully have Dave Sellers on this hour, but it really is contingent on whether or not things change here as far as the phones, and we'll see what happens. But I can't wait to have Dave on. Dave Sellers really is an amazing individual when it comes to architecture and design, and we're going to pick his brain and learn all about that hopefully this hour. If not, you'll hear me carry on for quite a bit. But anyway, Dave is an architect who I think it was Architectural Digest chose as one of the top 100 in the world. And we have him right here in Vermont, and hopefully we'll get the opportunity to speak to him this hour. Not only was he at the forefront of the design build movement up on Prickly Mountain in Warren, but also 10 years ago started something called the Madsonian Museum. And it's a wonderful hidden gem in Waitsfield where you can find some of the most amazing design in industry. And it's all on display there, from toasters to automobiles. And we'll learn about that too when we are able to connect with Dave. So I don't think we can even take your calls, but we can try see if the incoming lines work right now for open phones at 244-1777-877-291-8255. If not, this will be a very incredible hour of learning about Rick Sengary and the inner workings of my mind and my interest in architecture. I am I'm like the George Costanza. If you remember, would take on that persona of Art Vandelay and believe that he was indeed an architect, or at least could have been one. That's me. I am totally captivated by architecture, and so the opportunity to speak with Dave Sellers, who is an icon in American architecture, is a great opportunity that we might have to reschedule. We'll find out as the morning goes on, as this 10 o'clock hour goes on. First of all, I think you understand my love of Vermont and getting to see all corners of this beautiful state. I'm always amazed when I find someone who's lived there their whole lives and haven't been to Brattleboro or haven't been to the Northeast Kingdom and or out to Isle of Mott. And I think you just get in the car and see these far reaches of the state, because there's so much that we have. You'll pull into towns and you'll just be stunned by what beauty there is, or an old building that really moves you, or maybe it's just a nice little burger stand on the side of the road that has Michigan dogs and great fries, hand-cut fries, and you think, man, I would drive here on any weekend day that I have off to do that again, and you will. You meet wonderful people around this state. You know, I yesterday asked, what typifies Vermonters, and they're kind. They love to share their stories. They're so helpful. And so when you get out there, if you're looking for a covered bridge and you get lost, don't worry. A Vermonter will get you there. Sometimes they'll even lead you there. One time I was looking for a covered bridge up in Coventry, and the person who guided me said, have you been to the site of where Phish had, at that time, their last concert? And gave me directions, got to see. They still had some of the palm trees upside down. They also told me the guy who bought the stage, where it was stored, and I got to drive out and see that. And I'm not even a Phish fan, but it's Vermont lore, it's Vermont history, it's Vermont stuff. And the more you get to know about this place, the more you get to love it. We're missing an interview right now with Dave Sellers, really at the forefront of the design build movement, in the early 70s, I believe, was when that, really launched up there on Prickly Mountain, in Warren. And then 10 years ago started the Madsonian Museum in Waitsfield, which is a museum of industrial design, and it is just a wonderful place to spend a few hours and see what it, you know, Dave has categorized as being great design in industrial products, and you'll see everything from old washing machines and considered convenience items to cars and clocks and radios. It's phenomenal. Teapots, and you'll say, wait, that's a teapot. That's the teapot I want in my kitchen. Really phenomenal. And we'll get to Dave, if not today, then we'll reschedule, because he's a gem and he's ours. He's here in Vermont. Went to school at Yale University and at the University of Chicago. How about that? Bernie and Dave Sellers, University of Chicago. Yeah, two brilliant minds. And here in Vermont, Vermont treasures, really. And we have so many Vermont treasures. And, well, if the phones don't start working again, you're going to hear about all of them from me in the next, what do we got, about 42 minutes? Oh, boy. I do have an active mind and have a lot of stories to tell. I can talk sports, but it is always great to have phone calls. But right now, we're not going to get those. We did have a couple interviews earlier today, if you missed them, and they will be up online. We talked with Jennifer Rickards from down at the Monshire Museum, which is right on the border of Vermont and New Hampshire, hence the Monshire, started in Hanover, New Hampshire, now right across the Connecticut River in Norwich, Vermont, and a really fun place to take kids and grandkids. You'll love it. And they learn something about science and outdoors, and they love the river there. So the folks who run the Monshire Museum, so you'll get a nice introduction to the history of the Connecticut River, which at one time had massive log drives down the Connecticut River, and they straightened out the old oxbows to, you know, to make it straight and get the logs down the river. We need to do a show on the history of logging here in Vermont. Pretty incredible stuff that went on, and it was dangerous stuff, but really outstanding. All right. Architecture, it would be the topic right now with Dave Sellers, but for some gremlins, some ghosts in the machines right now. And we'll be back hopefully to talk with someone, or you're just going to hear me monologue for the hour, which it's not the worst thing you've ever heard on radio. Dave Sellers, if you don't know, one of the foremost architects in the world today, lives right here in Vermont. A creator at the beginning of the design build movement, which is carried on today, I think, by Yestermorrow design build school, for instance. But back in the early 70s, Dave and some of his architect friends went up there on Prickly Mountain in Warren, and man, they made some creations. They would design as they built, is how I understand it. And there's some really they're unique structures. That's all I can say about it. A few years ago, built the Home Run House in Warren that I got to go up and see on Friday, and oh, amazing. And then 10 years ago, Dave started something called the Madsonian Museum. And if you're in Waitsfield, whenever you're in the Valley, there's so much to do, to eat, to see. But stop in at the Madsonian. You want to check out the website first. I think they're only open certain days of the week, so you'll want to know that. But Madsonian.org is where you'd go for that. But you can, you know, head to Lawson's. You can head up to Von Trapp's, where they have a great farm store now. And they have a lot of their products or other Vermont products right there in the store. Of course, the Village Grocery and Troy Kingsbury. And get some gas. Help whatever the charity of the month is. Have a great lunch there. And, of course, if you get to talk to Troy, you'll laugh and hear some great stories. But there's so many wonderful things. The Warren store, you know, Waitsfield and Warren, I always think of them as one. They're not that far apart. They do have two distinct personalities, but they're both worth just spending the day in. You'll love it in the Valley. And that's where Dave lives and has the Madsonian Museum. It's in Waitsfield. I will tell you that when I went to see Dave on Friday, I went to see the Madsonian for the first time. I went up to the Von Trapp farm store, and as I drove back, coming around the back down Bridge Street, the covered bridge was closed, and a Ryder truck, this is not funny, but a Ryder truck had, you heard it this morning, Lisa Loomis of the Valley Reporter had the story, 19-year-old driver from Barrie had rented this Ryder truck, and the truck was, it was taller than the bridge could handle, smashed the facing of the bridge, and then got itself wedged under some of the beams, cross beams, and eventually they had to leave air out of the tires to be able to back the truck out of the bridge. All right, you're wondering, why is he talking all by himself in there? Well, you know, this happens. This is live radio, and I can't wait for you to meet Dave Sellers, the architect, the founder of the Madsonian Museum of Industry in Waitsfield. But, you know, we'll get him on. And it might not be today. You might have to hear me babble a little bit more. I will tell you this. There's a show I've been streaming, and this is on Amazon Prime. It's called Britain's Hidden Villages, hosted by Penelope Keith, who is a wonderful actress, British actress. But if you have a thing for England and Scotland and Wales like I do, this is a fabulous program, Britain's Hidden Villages. And not only to see these British villages, but just like me, you know, I love the Vermont villages. And so you see the same ingredients, the same things that make a village in the UK are what we have here in Vermont. These wonderful little town centers, the people who care about one another, people who rally to, you know, fix a covered bridge when it burns down or is wiped out by a flood. And you'll find these same exact things going on in Britain in this show. And I think this would have been shot about 4 or 5 years ago, but so it's still quite current. It's called Britain's Hidden Villages, and it's hosted by Penelope Keith, one of the things I'm enjoying streaming right now. All right, and I did get to hear our Craig Durham, who's now on the morning news service, do some of the game last night. He's down in Florida for the Olympic baseball qualifying, and last night it was the U.S. against the Dominican Republic. And so Craig came on at like 7 o'clock. The U.S. was a little late getting onto the field, but they entered the field, and as soon as they get on the field, a deluge. It just starts pouring. And so they're out there warming up in the rain. The U.S. pitcher faced one batter, struck him out, threw one pitch to the second batter, and that was enough. It was a monsoon, and at that point they put the tarps on. Apparently they got the game in. That's as much of Craig I got to hear, but they did eventually get the game in, and the U.S. beat the Dominican Republic, which is a bit of a surprise. Dominican Republic, very strong in baseball. 8-6 win for the U.S., 2-0. Canada's 2-0, so they'll both advance to the next round of this Olympic baseball qualifying. Good luck to both teams, and good on Craig Durham doing a nice job calling those games down in Florida, and I think it'll be on again tonight. I'm streaming it on ESPN Plus, and so I think that's where you can see it as well. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to hit the CBS News update, and you know, who knows what'll happen when we come back sometime around 10:35. We could have a guest, or I could be talking to Danny McGivergan, our director, or I'll just be chatting. We'll see what happens.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
All right. The answer marching. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri, and we're guestless this morning. Yeah, sometimes these things happen, and it's not because of our guest, Dave Sellers, architect and founder of Madsonian Museum of Industry. Unfortunately, the can that we have here tied to a string with the can he's got down there in Waitsfield, somebody must have clipped it. No, there's phone problems, and hey, this is what happens sometimes. So I've been babbling for a half hour. Now we're going to bring in the guy who makes sure that everything runs properly here. You don't hear him ever, but he's our director, Danny McGivergan, makes sure that we get our guests on. Then there's listeners calling in. He's juggling that as we go to a break, making sure I hit our time cues. But we're going to talk a little sports. First of all, so last night in the NBA, and this is really Danny's sweet spot, we had the Celtics losing last night, getting drubbed and out of the playoffs in five games. And we kind of knew they were coming up against a very difficult New York Nets team. It was a 50-50 season. It was a mediocre season for the Celtics, and then they had to play a team who the only way the Nets were going to lose was by implosion, maybe some personality problems. That didn't crop up in the five games, and it was Nets over the Celtics in five. So one good thing we saw in game four, great night, 50-point night, which was a great one from, who was that, Jaylen?
Jason Tatum.
And that, you love to see that step up, in the limelight. But there is breaking news right now out of Boston and the Celtics, and it looks like it's bye-bye to Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens making a move.
Brad Stevens, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, who is breaking news for ESPN, Danny Ainge is expected to step down, and Brad Stevens is expected to assume a more prominent front office role with the team, says Woj.
And so that doesn't mean that Stevens will give up the coaching, right?
He'll
do the double, which a lot of coaches in professional sports want to have want to have control over personnel moves, right? And that's what it looks like Stevens is trying for. Danny Ainge has done a really good job. He brought in the big three, got the championship. This was an off season. Do you think it's time for a change there in the front office?
He's taken a lot of heat the past couple of years, but all in all, I think a positive impact in Boston. But
I do too. And I'm not a big Danny Ainge guy, but quite frankly, I thought he did a great job. Don't forget, Danny Ainge was a two-sport star. You remember this? Danny Ainge played
BYU, right? Played basketball and
baseball, and then he played for the Toronto Blue Jays. He was a decent second baseman and played, in the NBA. So Ainge, a good all-around athlete, and then I thought ex-ball player throwing him in this role, and I honestly think he stepped up and did a great job in the front office. I don't know if he's leaving the Celtics completely or just getting out of kind of the personnel side of it.
Yes, stepping down as president, that's not very clear on if he's staying within the organization or if he's moving on.
Well, yeah, when you step down as president, I don't think you come back as
probably
like...
Probably not.
No. Yeah. I'll do some PR for the club or, I'll work in ticket sales. No, I'm pretty sure you're right.
He did work in Phoenix, though, right?
He did, yeah.
For a time.
Yeah, that sounds right, too. So in other NBA action last night, it was the Nuggets over the Trailblazers, an exciting double overtime 147-140 win. That puts Denver ahead of Portland 3-2 in that exciting series. And this is the shocker. The Phoenix Suns beat the Lakers 115-85. Suns up 3-2 in that series. The Phoenix Suns have almost been the West Coast Knicks.
For
years, absolutely nothing, being kind of garbage. And then just like the Knicks, fun team they made a giant step forward this year.
Yeah, the last time I remember the Suns being good was in maybe 2006 with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. So
that's right.
It's been a while.
And before that, it was, you won't remember this, the Van Arsdales playing out there in the Valley of the Sun. And that was way back. And somebody right now is driving around said, I remember them. Tom and Dick Van Arsdale. Yeah, it was a long, long time ago. They've had some decent clubs in and out, but not for a long time recently, and they're up 3-2 on the Lakers. Never can count out the Lakers and LeBron. Yeah, you gotta win four. And just like the Toronto Maple Leafs learned in the series with the Habs, they had a 3-1 lead, and the Habs took it 4-3. Are you a hockey guy, too?
Fair weather. I'll watch the hockey playoffs, but
well, the Stanley Cup playoffs are the best playoffs. Yeah, they're the best playoffs in sports. And I follow sports all around the globe. I'll watch Highland League soccer from Scotland. I watch rugby union, rugby league from Australia. I just am a sports nick. But quite honestly, when it comes to the playoffs, there's nothing at all like the Stanley Cup playoffs. Everybody elevates their game. You get a hot goaltender, and you can win from an 8 seed or whatever seed you've got. It's a little kooky this year because it's broken into four regional conferences that didn't exist before, an all-Canadian one, which was really exciting. The Winnipeg Jets upsetting the Edmonton Oilers in the first round of that Canadian series, and then the Habs upsetting the Maple Leafs. So it's going to be Winnipeg and Montreal, and I think they get started tonight. Are they going to move everybody up to Canada for the next round?
Working on that with some sort of travel waiver between the countries.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So the last year they did a bubble up north of the border for all the playoffs, and this year there's been no play across border throughout the regular season, throughout the first two rounds of the playoffs, but they're going to have to face that pretty soon, and there should be some answer on what they're going to do. I'm not sure what the answer is to bubble it again in Canada or in the States. It'd be great if they could, go back and forth, but I don't know that Canada has enough vaccinations yet. They haven't necessarily reached a high enough level to make it totally safe for everybody, but we'll see what goes on with that. All right, here's what's going on. The phones had a little problem today. Bad day. It was a Monday for the phones on a Wednesday. Hump day. Wednesday is when, do you know this, that Wednesday is when we're at our peak during the work week, Danny? We actually perform best, and if you can ever find what day a car has come off the production line, you want to buy a car that was produced on a Wednesday.
Really?
Not on a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon. Buy a car that was made on a Wednesday. That'll be the best quality.
I'm writing that down.
Yes, please. No one told the phones this morning, though, and they took the day off about halfway through this show, and that's where we are right now. I do promise you that we will get Dave Sellers rebooked. Dave Sellers was to be my guest this hour. He is one of the creators of those famed structures up on Prickly Mountain and a leader of the design build movement, great architect, and we'll pick his brain about that. But also 10 years ago he created the Madsonian Museum of Industrial Design, which is in Waitsfield, and it's a great place to stop in and see some amazing things, not only like household items that I've talked about, but there is a 1934 Dodge DeSoto and a 1936 Duesenberg, and great stories to tell about those when you visit. But the Dodge DeSoto was really interesting, and Dave will tell you in more great detail about why this is an important vehicle. But you went from up till that time really boxy, Model T's or Model A's or whatever they had, but things were just made very utilitarian and very box-like. And all of a sudden, you had design and curves and aerodynamics. And here was this Dodge DeSoto in 1934. This is the turning point in automobile design. And you can see that at the Madsonian Museum. And I do encourage you to go to madsonian.org, check out when they're open, and you can stop in. It's a great time there in Waitsfield. Okay, what else we got? This is interesting news. Vermont's Summer Free Fishing Day, Fish and Wildlife just sent this out. It'll be Saturday, June the 12th, and it's the opening day of the regular bass fishing season, but it gives anglers the opportunity to go fishing without a license for that day on Vermont lakes and streams. So if you want to get out Saturday after next, June the 12th, it is Vermont's summer free fishing day. Great time to take a youngster out and see if maybe they have an interest in fishing. I love seeing my my brother take his his own son out actually fishing, and then he took his granddaughter out a few weeks ago, and not totally into it, you know, but she's still young, 6 or 7. But anyway, she had her first attempt at fishing. All right, let's talk a little baseball. Let's get Danny McGivergan, our director, back in here. First of all, Danny, let's talk about those Red Sox. Another loss to the Astros. This is a pretty tough series so far. Last night, 5-1. The night before, it was a bludgeoning, wasn't it? What was that one? Like 11-3, maybe?
Let's check here.
Yeah. I could be making it up, but we lost pretty badly the night before down in Houston, 11-2. And so I don't think the Astros were banging on any trash cans. It was just a better night, a better couple nights so far for the Astros, who are definitely one of the contenders in the AL this year. Sox have fallen a couple games behind the Rays, but the Rays, when I went to bed, they were still, I think, leading and over the Yankees, but it changed in the 11th inning, didn't it?
Clint Frazier, walk-off home run.
How about Clint? So one time we'd root for the Yankees. They're a couple, 2.5 behind us, and with the Rays finally losing, they've been red hot lately. The Sox stay 2 games out of first in the AL East. My Chicago White Sox, I love teams with the name Sox in them, so the Red Sox and White Sox. Red Sox and White Sox playing good ball. They're two and a half games up over the Cleveland Indians in the Central, the AL Central. And then the Astros are a half game out behind Oakland out in the West in the AL.
You a fan of guaranteed rate field?
Well, now, that's a very interesting question. That's a great question. A terrible name. So the last year that the Sox played at Old Comiskey, I flew up. I was living in Miami, and I flew up for a weekend series and got to spend it was in August, Friday, Saturday, Sunday against the Angels. And I will tell you this. First of all, Comiskey, Old Comiskey and New Comiskey, best ballpark food you'll ever find. As a matter of fact, they took the old grills and everything that they had at Old Comiskey, moved it into New Comiskey. The grease was still there from 1912. Delicious food, Chicago dogs, sausages, combo sandwiches. Trust me, guaranteed rate field, terrible name. So I went, and actually on the Saturday night game, I spent it up in the left field bleachers. And let me just say, south side of Chicago, a bit of an earthy crowd. And I learned some swear words I have never heard since or before. And the one thing about going to a Sox game, a White Sox game, is you hop on the L. And after the game, if the Sox win, if the White Sox win, the fans react as if the Sox have never won a game before. They will never win another game again. They are,
wow.
Yeah, the most joyous fans you've ever seen. Not in an obnoxious way, just really joyous, when the Sox win. Not unlike what it's like in Fenway, but a bit different. Anyway, great food there. So then the very next year, they built the new stadium. I still refer to it as New Comiskey. And it was the last of the modern stadiums. So Baltimore came in with Camden Yards, and now the retro stadiums, the White Sox still had this, you know, did this kind of really modern looking stadium. Eventually they'd done some work to it. They cut out like a lot of the center field bleachers that went out there, and they've gussied it up and made it a little bit more let's say warm. And I will tell you though that the White Sox fans are as knowledgeable as Red Sox fans, really diehard and great fans down on the south side of Chicago. So I have a real soft spot. I love Wrigley too, and since I'm not from Chicago, I can root for both Cubs and White Sox. You can't if you live in Chicago.
No.
You know that,
no,
right?
No.
Yeah. And so, like, the Chicago fans can rally around the Bears. They love them. They can rally around the Blackhawks and the Bulls. But when it comes to baseball, there's a divide.
Choose your side.
You right? choose your yeah. side, yeah. And I don't know that New York is exactly like that. But big cities like Liverpool, where they have Liverpool and Everton, Glasgow, where they have Celtic and Rangers, you have a bit more of that. But in Chicago, when it comes to baseball, it's Sox or Cubs. And, yeah, a lot of the Cubs fans would come down to Comiskey that last year of old Comiskey. And the White Sox fans did not take kindly to that. They would heckle the Cubs fans who came in to see the last of old Comiskey. But, yeah, I love Chicago. Great city. You know, if I ever had to leave Vermont and live in a big city again, I would definitely want to live in Chicago. But I do not want to live anywhere else. Vermont with its villages and towns and lovely people. And with a radio station that allowed me to now chat for the last hour.
So you're staying?
Without a guest, yeah, I'm staying. Okay. I'm sticking around. Dave Sellers and I will reschedule. You'll get to hear the brilliance of Dave Sellers, architect at the forefront of the design-build movement when that came into being. You're going to find him just absolutely fascinating, and also the creator of the Madsonian Museum of Industrial Design, which is in Waitsfield, and you can go to madsonian.org to learn more about that. But we'll get Dave rescheduled, and you'll get to hear all about it. Sorry, what happened with the phones? These things do occur, and they did today. And we'll get it fixed, and we'll have another show for you tomorrow. So I'll be back here tomorrow. I want to thank Danny McGivergan, not only the director of the show, but today my only guest in the 10 o'clock hour. Great job, Danny. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.